Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. But first, we need to tell you that we're sponsored today by SaneBox. Get your inbox in a sane position. Back to inbox zero. Go to SaneBox.com/martini, and SaneBox will throw in an extra $25 credit on top of their two-week free trial. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in the podcast later on. Jim, let's begin with the good martini. And while the presidential race has certainly not provided us many good martinis at all this year, we're at least still hopeful that the Republicans can hold on to the House. That's looking more and more likely, but still not a done deal. And, of course, there's the big battle for control of the U.S. Senate. And one of the seats that the Democrats were hoping to pick up was in Florida when they thought that Marco Rubio was not going to be on the ballot for that race this year. He decided, of course, at the last minute that he was going to after being unsuccessful in winning the Republican presidential nomination. Last night in Florida was debate night between Rubio and the Democratic nominee, Congressman Patrick Murphy. We've talked about his, let's just call it fictitious resume, a couple different times here in the Three Martini Lunch. And Rubio did an expert job of just annihilating Patrick Murphy for his lies and, of course, attributing it to the investigative reporters who actually dug through all this. But here is the Rubio indictment of Patrick Murphy, who has accomplished nothing.
Here are the facts, Congressman. You didn't run saying you were a CPA. You ran saying your experience working as a CPA would serve the country. You've never had a license to work as a CPA in Florida, so either you never worked as a CPA or you were working illegally as an unlicensed CPA. It's number two, you never had a single contract to clean up the Gulf of Mexico. So the company was only open for 5 months, and it lost money from the beginning. And number three, you didn't have a dual degree from the University of Miami because they don't give dual degrees at the University of Miami. Why does someone make things up about their record? Because they don't have a real one to talk about. He has yet to cite a single major legislative achievement in his name or a single major cause that he has led in his 4 years,
Senator,
in Congress. Congressman, you're not some outsider running to go in the Senate. You are a sitting congressman who have been in the Congress for 4 years, and we are 40 minutes into the debate, and you cannot tell us a single signature achievement that you have been able to achieve in your 4 years in the House. Not
Congressman.
One.
Devastating. Murphy's only strategy was to try and tie Rubio to Trump over and over again because we know how close those two are, Jim. But it's just good to have a Republican on the debate stage who can have a logical flow to his statement and speak in complete sentences. It's refreshing.
It is. At this point earlier today, I saw this that clip you just played, and I was like, oh, now Rubio hits it out of the park in a debate. And I was quickly corrected. A lot of people pointed out that most of the presidential debates, Marco Rubio had a good night. He just had one really bad moment up in New Hampshire. And that one certainly appeared to catch him. Kind of wonder if he'd ever gone after Christie and Bridgegate the way he just dismantled Patrick Murphy's resume, whether things would have turned out a little bit differently. You know, usually when you nominate an empty suit, the best case scenario is that they're harmless. You know, there's not much there to object to. But when you're an empty suit who has largely exaggerated your life story and your accomplishments and what you've done with your life, man, oh, man, it was just, you know, that was just surgical strike one after another. I kept waiting for Rubio to light up a cigar and do the Columbo routine. Just one more question, Congressman Murphy. So, yeah, the other thing is, you know, in the middle of saying that, you know, Rubio should be beaten because he's so much like Trump and that Trump is vulgar, I believe then out of nowhere, Rubio points to a Facebook post on Patrick Murphy's Facebook page from like 4 years ago where he's either groping a woman or he's mimicking groping a woman. I'm assuming it's all in good fun with the woman in the picture. Otherwise, we probably would have heard about some sort of complaints about this with Patrick Murphy. But, you know, those with glass houses shouldn't throw stones and things like that. It is a bad year for Florida Democrats. They really had a good chance. You know, they thought they had a shot here. And man, oh, man, is Rubio just taking Patrick Murphy to school. So all things considered, you know, the Republicans could wish they were in better circumstances. But at least one thing has gone right in the Sunshine State this year.
Well, so far, and the polls in there have had Rubio consistently ahead. Several of them are still closer than we'd probably like in that race. But let's hope that that Rubio can hang on there. Okay, let's go to our bad martini now. And yesterday, Donald Trump tweeted, and this is your lead story in the morning jolt today, Jim. Of course, there is large-scale voter fraud happening on and before Election Day. Why do Republican leaders deny what is going on? So naive! Exclamation point, of course. Jim, this has been a consistent theme of Trump in recent days, to the point where Mike Pence has had to distance himself a little bit. There's a new poll that I saw out somewhere that 41% believe that the election will be rigged. So we're not talking about a fringe of the population anymore. We're getting close to 50%. This has been Trump's crutch every time he's gotten into trouble. When Ted Cruz looked like he was making some progress towards Trump in the delegate count and was doing a good job behind the scenes in states that had caucuses and primaries just to select delegates like Colorado and so forth, the system is rigged. The system is rigged. And so then, of course, when he actually won, we never heard about that again. When he was doing better against Hillary Clinton, we never heard anything. And now that he's fallen behind after these allegations and so forth, he's bringing out the rigged card again. And the problem is, as George Will explains here on Special Report with Brett Baer, it's completely legit to talk about voter fraud because there's a lot of things Democrats can't explain very well.
It is hard to think of an innocent reason why Democrats spend so much time, energy, and money, scarce resources all, resisting attempts to purge the voter rolls, that is, to remove people who are dead or otherwise have left the jurisdiction. It's hard to think of an innocent reason why they fight so tremendously against voter ID laws.
And so there's reason to believe that the Democrats do engage in shenanigans. We've seen James O'Keefe videos and all sorts of other things over the years to prove that that's true. You do a good job in the Jolt today of documenting to the extent that we know it exists, and it's hard to know exactly, but you have some hard numbers on instances where it has happened. But for Trump to use this as essentially an excuse for why he may lose an entire election, and if the national polls are correct, it could be a wide enough margin where it's pretty hard to believe that voter fraud would make the difference.
Everything Trump touches tends to turn to something bad. I'll let you fill in the metaphor there that you like. but you know, this is one of those things where he's taking a very legitimate argument. Look, Republicans and folks on the right and a few folks on the left have been arguing about the potential for voter fraud for a really long time, but it's very important to keep perspective in this, meaning that I don't think there are too many Republicans who would argue that any of the past presidential elections were decided by fraudulent votes. We have found evidence of fraudulent votes, and here are the three different kinds you can find. You can find the dead who are voting, someone dies and they remain on the voter rolls and they keep casting ballots after they die. You can have people voting more than once, and I talk a little in a second about the most common way that happens. And then you have the people who, the illegal immigrants casting ballots, someone who is not eligible to cast a ballot, and they figure out some way to get to get through the system anyway. In the case of the dead voting, yeah, you know, CBS Denver did find some cases of that earlier this year. They found four. Now, they found dozens still listed on the voter rolls, and there's two different problems here. First is, are you dead and still on the voter roll as someone who is eligible to vote? That's a problem, but that's probably a clerical error. That's a matter of the election officials simply not being careful, but that is potential for a fraudulent vote. But finding someone who actually cast a ballot after dying, does it happen? Yes. Does it happen in numbers where you'd think you'd be able to swing a race? Certainly not a statewide race. You might do it in a really close local election, state legislative, maybe even one of the super close House elections, but you're just not going to find it on, you know, the tens of thousands of votes that is the normal margin in a statewide election, whether it's a Senate race, gubernatorial race, or presidential. People voting five times or 10 times, we haven't found too many cases of one person filling out lots and lots of ballots for fake people, because you have to register as a voter first. And generally to register as a voter, you have to either show photo ID or provide a social security number, or provide a bank statement or a name on a lease or some other official documentation saying you are who you say you are. Are voter ID laws exactly as I'd like to see them? No, it varies from state to state, and some are a lot looser than others. But having said that, no one has found one person casting hundreds of ballots, thousands of ballots, things like that. What you do find are people who have two homes and register to vote in both localities, the snowbirds who are up in the New York area who then go down to live in Florida. Back in 2004, the New York Daily News found 46,000 New Yorkers registered to vote in both places. And people might be going, oh, you know, that sounds terrible. They actually went and looked also and found that between 400 and 1,000 registered voters voted twice in at least one election. Now, that is bad. That is particularly bad if the presidential election comes down to like 500 votes in Florida. Having said that, no one determined that those voters were the ones that did it. Orlando Sentinel did a similar study and found about 1,650. Kansas City Star found 300 people who voted in both Kansas and Missouri. So this does happen. And my sense is this is general arrogance. People who think that, well, I own property in both places, I should be allowed to vote in both places. It would be really good if state election officials could crack down on this and start sharing their voter rolls and figuring out if someone's registered to vote in both places and if they're casting ballots in both places. Once again, you're not going to get a statewide race changing because of this. Now, a House race where you have like it was 2014, the closest House race was a Republican, Martha McSally, beating Ron Barber by 161 votes in Arizona's 2nd District. Now, I'm not saying that happened then. I'm saying you'd have to have probably a race that close to have it swung by fraudulent votes. And then finally, there's illegal immigrants. There was this study that I wrote about back in 2014 that asserted 700,000 illegal immigrants voted in the 2008 election. And they contended that it probably provided Barack Obama his very narrow margin of victory in the state of North Carolina. And people were shocked and they tore their hair up about it. And they thought, oh my goodness. And all of a sudden you look more closely at this study. I'm not saying the study is wrong. I'm just going to say it's not the most precise or ideal way to reach a figure like that, contending that 700,000 illegal immigrants voted. They didn't do this by looking at ballots. They didn't do this by looking at voting records or other documents or things like that. They did it by basically a really big survey. It was run by YouGov, Polymetrics. They asked 50,000 people. And a couple hundred people in both of those surveys, they did one in 2008, one in 2010, said that I am not a U.S. citizen. Then amongst those groups, they asked you, did you vote? And 21% said, yes, I voted in 2008, and 8 said they voted in 2010. So some people are telling a pollster, I am not a U.S. citizen, and I have cast a ballot in one of the two previous elections. So besides the fact, call the cops. But the other problem is they just took that percentage and then applied it to the entire U.S. non-citizen population. And I'm not sure you could necessarily take a sample that size of, 21 people out of a couple hundred and then apply it to the entire 11 million illegal immigrants in this country. The second thing is that some of this, all this data is self-reported. It wasn't verified against INS records or citizenship records or voting records or anything like that. Some of the data was kind of contradictory. People reported to be non-citizens in 2012 when they said they had been citizens in 2010. And the other thing which really struck me as odd, Greg, is that most of the people who said they were illegal immigrants who had cast ballots said they already were in it. They were in jurisdictions that required photo ID to vote, and they said they had photo ID. So either they're lying, either they're confused, or they have really, really good forged photo ID. All of those are possibilities, but I think it kind of indicates that I don't think you're seeing hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants voting in this country. Now, every one of these cases, you should investigate them, and if you break the law, you should be prosecuted. Anybody who's voting twice is diluting the one legitimate vote that the rest of us get. You have to cite the specifics. You have to cite the details. You can't do, you go with the argument that Donald Trump did where he said, well, a lot of things are happening. There's a lot of stuff going on. Gee, thank you, Donald, for narrowing it down so specifically like that. Because it's a big accusation to make, that the idea that it's going on a massive scale. And I'm left, wondering, Greg, if it really is this giant ongoing voter fraud to help elect Hillary, don't you think Rick Scott in Florida would do something about it in that state? Or Pat McCrory in North Carolina, Terry Branstad in Iowa? All of them are supporters of Trump. Why are they allowing the elections to be stolen in their own states?
Jim, come on now. You know it's the elites. You've heard this explanation throughout the entire fall campaign.
It's the elites who endorse Trump.
The polls are rigged, and the only reason the polls are rigged so that when the elites control the vote totals next month, it'll look like it was expected to happen. Come on.
There you go. I forgot that. The chemtrails probably got to me, Greg.
Right. I believe Trump also called the opening skit of Saturday Night Live another reason that the system was rigged, because he was not happy with how he was portrayed by Alec Baldwin. Surprise, surprise.
Ask George W. Bush how nice Saturday Night Live was to him. Or George H.W. Bush, or Mitt Romney, or Bob Dole. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, this campaign is insane. We know that. But how about inbox sanity? We can at least have sanity with our email. And right now, during an election season, both you and I, Jim, probably don't think that we even have that because of all the different press releases, all the different people who have the experts that we need to talk to, and all the insights that we've just overlooked and would totally crystallize our perspective of this campaign. Well, we want those people largely to go away. So how do you do that? You get SaneBox. So how many emails do you have in your inbox? 100, 1,000, 20,000? If your email is anything like ours, the answer is too many. So you have a problem, though, because you have all these emails. Some of them you actually want, A lot of them you don't, but you don't have time to go through these thousands of emails. So Inbox Zero is what you're after, and Sanebox has a great feature by basically using its own technology to figure out what you want to see, and that stays in your inbox, and then they create these other folders like Sane Later so you can get to when you have the time. So this is Inbox Zero, and it's called Taking Back Email Sanity.
The product is Sanebox, and I cannot recommend it enough. Sanebox sorts through all of your emails and moves all the trivial stuff into a different folder, so the only messages in your inbox are the ones you actually want to see. Now, aside from removing all of the junk so you can focus on messages that matter, there's this wonderful little provision called the black hole. No, it's not from the Raiders game, crazy people in the stands, or anything like that. This is a folder where if you move an email into that folder, you'll never hear from that sender again. I'm sure there's someone in your life who you wish you could do this, not just to their emails, maybe to the person as well, but, you know, just for their emails. You just put it in there, and you never hear from them again. It is so rewarding. Greg and I both use Sanebox and have worked out a great deal for our listeners.
Yes, you can visit Sanebox.com/martini today. Sanebox.com/martini. They'll throw in an extra $25 credit on top of the 2-week free trial. So you can try it for 2 weeks with no obligation. You don't have to give them your credit card information unless you decide to eventually buy. So there's nothing to lose. Check it out today and let us know if you love the black hole and these other features and reaching Inbox Zero as much as we do. Again, that's sanebox.com/martini, sanebox.com/martini. All right, Jim, on to the crazy martini now. Speaking of sanity and back to the WikiLeaks releases, and it's already been a pretty rough stretch in these releases for the mainstream media, and they're fawning over the Clinton campaign and their lack of objectivity or even fairness as they correspond with the campaign. The latest one in the crosshairs, Glenn Thrush of Politico. He was doing a story in late April 2015, so just after Hillary formally announced her 2016 campaign. And he was doing a story that actually wasn't all that favorable. It's called Hillary's Big Money Dilemma, which focused on fundraising concerns for the Clinton campaign in its early stages. And so this is the email that's getting a lot of attention that he sends to John Podesta. No worries, because I have become a hack, I will send you the whole section that pertains to you. Please don't share or tell anyone I did this. Tell me if I bleeped up anything. Jim, there's a now big fight between the Daily Caller and Glenn Thrush at Politico, and Politico itself is involved and all sorts of things. He's sending out tweets saying, I just emailed him to confirm stuff I got from lesser sources. It worked. Nobody controls my stories but me. Troll on. And then he also said this was a story ginned up by the fake in-the-bag partisan media. So clearly he's doing nothing outside of normal journalistic ethics, Jim, when he says, don't tell anyone I did this.
You know what else, Greg? It's fake. It's rigged. It's ginned up. Everyone's saying that these days. Look, I want to salute Glenn Thrush for honesty in advertising. I am a hack, you know. Look, if you want to contact a source and say, look, I've heard this. Is this accurate? Or can I get this checked with you? Can I get your take on this? All of that's perfectly fine. It's the, you know, or even the, this is what I'm thinking of writing. Is there anything wrong with this? You can even, you know, get up to that line. I'm going to send you the section. You tell me if it's okay. Gets into a much more grayish area in which you're basically either letting the source censor your piece or letting the source edit your piece. And then the second thing is just very amusing to see somebody who's been accused of being a hack for the Democrats and for liberals and progressives for a really long time and vehemently denied it, emailing John Podesta and saying, because I'm a hack, and basically making kind of the infamous confession. It's as somebody once said, the only thing we're missing from these emails is somebody saying, hey, let's do some embezzling, huh? You know, what better way to deny being a hack than to come out and say, oh, by the way, when I said I was a hack, I didn't mean that I was a hack. Kind of like, you know, I totally don't grope women, even though I brag about it.
Yeah, you can't come back from that with any sort of explanation that's going to look good. And now, as we said, Politico and the Daily Caller, which was one of the early ones to jump on this story, are in a Twitter spat and other sorts of spats along the way. So, Jim, clearly a lot of healing needs to happen after this election. My gut instinct, though, is that almost none of it's actually going to happen.
Would any, you know, reporter learn from maybe I shouldn't sound so much like a suck up in my emails to sources, you know? You never know when your source might get hacked and put out. Like, again, it, on the one hand, do you want to schmooze the source? Yes. Do you want to persuade them, your friend, to trust you? Yes. But some of this just plays into the worst stereotypes of the media, and the people, somebody like Glenn Frush can't complain about people just calling him a hack if that's one of the phrases he used to describe himself. I assume he's doing it like semi-jokingly or sarcastic, but he's behaving in a rather hackish way towards Podesta, and couldn't happen to a nicer guy, I suppose.
Do you think in the end, after all these revelations, that once the election is over, these news operations are going to reevaluate how they do things, or are they just going to go into Hillary defense mode or Trump opposition mode as soon as the ballots are in?
My suspicion is you won't see a lot of that. You won't see a lot of contrition. You won't see a lot of rethinking. You won't see kind of any reevaluation or people taking life lessons from this flaming dumpster fire of an election. But I do kind of think there was a take from, I believe it was John Noonan in today's Morning Jolt. I kind of closed with it, where he said, look, we have the country furiously angry. We have the country feeling a total lack of trust in its leaders, total lack of trust in the media, having a sense, overwhelming numbers say the country is on the wrong track. It's been that way pretty much since the end of the Bush administration and the Great Recession. People really feel dispirited, alienated, distrustful, angry, betrayed. And if you're in a position of authority about this, and I suppose I should include myself in this and my, minuscule thimbleful of authority I have over at National Review, how do we heal this? How do we fix this? How do we get people to, how do we rebuild trust again? And I think looking at things like this probably would do the media some good. Stop thinking of yourself as being on a team, or the easiest way to nullify the idea or to dispel the idea that you're on a team, write things that are critical of the side you like. Be an ingrate every now and then, give credit to the opposition when it's due. Try to be more fair-minded about things. And then people will say, when you write something they don't like, all right, I don't agree with this one, but he's usually a fair-minded kind of guy. And it's going to take a long time to get back to that point. But I think it's necessary in order to have the freedom of the press and the Fourth Estate performing its traditional role. Otherwise, the country's politics are just going to devolve into competing cults of personality, assuming we're not there already and assuming there's a road back from this. So happy Tuesday, everybody.
On that lovely note, Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And a reminder to visit sanebox.com/martini today and get that special deal that you can only get through us. That's 2 weeks of a free trial as well as an extra $25 in credit on top of that trial. Sanebox.com/martini, SANEBOX.com/martini. And join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.